We're holding on. Jalad Omid Bey's five lines from the bottom. We were discussing, so the Mishnah had told us cases where a person, where there were rumors going around that a person was Mizana with an Eishes Ish, and based in, we said, based in force her husband to divorce her. So then this guy who she's suspect with, even if he marries her, we force them to get divorced, because they would be also daraisa, because kashem shasur labal kach asur laboil. So now we discuss: are we talking about when there's only a rumor, or are we talking about when there's edim? Rav had said we're talking about when there's edim. But we said also that if she doesn't have any children from her first husband, then there, like this, when she has children, we're concerned the laws on them. If we force them to get divorced, if we force her and the boil to get divorced, then people are going to say that these children are from him, and they're going to say that they're mamzerim, and therefore, if there's only a rumor, then we're not going to require them to get divorced unless there's edim. Whereas if there's edim, then we don't care whether there's children or not, because the fact is she's also daraisa. That's how Rav learns it. Morning, Aaron. So that was the last thing that we discussed. That Rav would understand that our Mishnah must be talking about where there are edim, because the Mishnah said hoitziuha, that which implies that they, meaning Beis Din, forced her to get divorced from her first husband, as opposed to hoitzia, which would imply that her husband did it voluntarily. So therefore, now Beis Din wouldn't have done that unless there was edim. So therefore, that means, says Rav, that according to this first version, that the Mishnah must be talking about when they were aged. The Gemara continues, V'ibois ema hani masnaisa rebi. Another possibility is you could say that these brises, we had one brisa, we said one brisa that said hanitan al eshes ish v'itzi'ua al yodai. We had a case where a person was claimed to have been mezana with an eshes ish, and her husband divorced her because of that. Then she married somebody else and was divorced. So now we said, if she marries this guy who the rumors were going around with, then lo yotzi, we don't force them to get divorced. So Rav would say, so we said before that Rav had said that was talking about where there were no edim anyway. So therefore, even the first husband wasn't required la halacha to divorce her. But if he did, then even though she married somebody else in between, and you would think that would be reason enough for people to say that the original rumor must not have been true. Otherwise, why would she have gone and married somebody else? Nevertheless, the hatchila, this guy shouldn't be marrying her. That was one braisa. And then the second braisa was that there's a difference between whether there are children or not, that if there are edim, then it doesn't matter whether she has children. And if not, then if she doesn't have children from her first husband, though, if she doesn't have children from her first husband, then Beis Din is going to force her and her first husband to get divorced only if there were actual edim, not if there was just a rumor. So now the Gemara says, "Be boyisema," or you could also answer that even if she doesn't have children. So the first answer was that there's a difference whether there's children or not in terms of whether we force them to get divorced. The Iboyesema is going to say that even when she doesn't have any children, still you need edim to force her to get divorced. So hanimasnaisa rebi. However, we can say that these brises are according to Rebbe, where Rebbe would say that even a coil, that even a rumor, is enough to force them to get divorced. The Tanya, which actually you have a machlokas actually between Rashi and Tosfos about the following brisa that we're going to quote. We're going to quote several cases where we say teitze. Now, does teitze mean? Rashi learns that teitze means that her husband would be required to divorce her because of these things that we're going to describe in the Braisa. On the other hand, Tosfos says that no, to be also to her husband would only be either where there was kinui yastira, like you have in Masech Sota, or where Edom actually saw them in a compromising position, whereas the cases we're going to talk about now in the Braisa, they didn't actually see. However, there is evidence that there was something wrong over here. So therefore, Tosfos says that Tetzeh doesn't mean that she'd have to divorce her first husband. It means that if she marries this guy where there was this, where there were these suspicions with, then we would force them to get divorced. Says that that these braises would be saying that Rebbe, that the following braise that we're going to quote would be saying that Rebbe holds that. And then there are Rishonim who learn that Tetzeh means that that her husband is not required to divorce her, but if he does, then she then he doesn't have to pay her ksuba because she put herself in what seems to be a very compromising position, as we're going to see now in the braisa, and therefore for that she forfeits her ksuba. So there's different opinions among the Rishonim how to learn the following braisa. But anyway, the Tanya, we learn in a braisa. Roicho yotze, suppose that a peddler is leaving the house, the isha chageres besinar, and then the husband comes into the house and finds that his wife is putting on her sinar. A sinar is like like something similar to underwear or girdle or something like that. Usually she wears it all the time. There's actually a takana of Ezra that a woman should wear one around the house because of tnius, even though she's wearing a skirt as well. So in this case, he finds her putting on her sinar as the roichel is leaving. Now, why would it have been off? The likelihood is that she took it off in order to be mezana with the guy. Do we have actual solid evidence? No, but it's still called davar mechur. It's still called an ugly thing. So Omer Rebbe, hoyel mechur ha-davar teitzei. So Rebbe says, since it's an ugly kind of situation, therefore teitzei, therefore she'd have to get divorced. So again, according to Rashi, we would mean that Rebbe would be saying even from her husband. According to Tosfos, would be saying if she ends up later on marrying this Roichel, then we would force them to get divorced. And according to some other Rishonim, it would mean that if her husband chooses to divorce her, then she forfeits her ksuba. Another example, Roich l'mayla min akila. Another example is also when the peddler is leaving and the husband comes in and finds spit on the top inside of the canopy over the bed. So in other words, obviously somebody was lying in the bed there and spat upward so that some of the spit is now on the inside, on the inside of the canopy. So what was going on? Very likely, again, do we have 100% evidence? No, but it's quite likely that they were lying there in bed and she spit at some point and some of it landed over there because she was lying on her back. There is actually a different explanation that some Meforshim say that maybe Roik over here is a euphemism for Shechvas Zera. So he finds some of that smear on the canopy. Anyway, again, Omer Rebbe, Hoyol Mechor HaDavar Tetzeh. Again, it's an ugly thing, and therefore Tetzeh, according to these various opinions of what Tetzeh means. Another example, Min Olim Afuchim Tachas Amita, if there are shoes turned upside down under the bed. Now, why would they be upside down? So Rashi explains that if we assume that they are not from her husband or from herself, then whoever put them there upside down would have done that in order that they shouldn't be so noticeable. Because I guess the idea is the bottoms of the shoes are pretty dirty and muddy and whatever, so therefore they'd kind of blend in with the floor as opposed to if they're right side up. So again, Omer Rebbe, Hoyel Mechor HaDavar Tetzeh. So Rebbe says this is also an ugly situation. The likelihood is, what are somebody else's shoes doing over there and upside down in order to camouflage them from the guy she's mezana with? So the Gemara says, what do you mean? So what do you mean? If just because you see upside down shoes, let's figure out whose shoes they are. And then let's see if they're her husband's shoes, then there's no problem. Ella Mokim, or if it's her shoes, Ella Mokim min Olam HaFuchim Tachas HaMita Omer Rebbe Horel Mechor HaDavar Tetzeh. Rather, what we mean is the place of the shoes is turned upside down. So Rashi has two explanations of that. One is that it means that you can see impressions in the dirt under the bed that the shoes were upside down over there. So the shoes aren't there now, so you can't tell whose they were, but you can tell there's indentations left in the dust over there that show that there were shoes in that position, which makes it likely, therefore, that whoever she was mezana with put his shoes over there upside down so they're not as noticeable at first glance, and then afterwards he took them and left. Rashi brings a second explanation. That it means that he found her shoes in the place where the husband usually puts his shoes, and therefore what would that mean? It means that there was probably some stranger in there. He put his shoes in where she usually puts hers, so therefore she didn't have room for her shoes over there. Therefore, she put it in the place of her husband's shoes. Rashi says, I don't like that explanation, because then the expression should be mokim in olam hofel. hafuchim in plural implies that there are two shoes that are upside down. In any case, so again, so therefore, Rebbe is saying that's an example of mechur hadrav. So therefore, so again, we can say, so we see from these braises that Rebbe holds that even when you don't have rumors, all you have is dover mechur, that's reason enough to that's reason enough to say teitze. So therefore, so we can say now that the earlier braises that we quoted on Chavdal and Omen Beis, the first one where we asked from it on Rav. That implied that we might be talking about a case when there's no edim, and the second one that said also that there's no edim, that there's talking about only a koil. So the first answer was that we said that Rav would say there's a difference between there's a difference if somebody else married her in between, and there's a difference whether there are children or not. But now we can say that instead, both those brises, as well as the one we just quoted about Dava Machur, are all going like Rebbe. So Rebbe is more machmer, but the Chachamim would disagree. So the Gemara says, "V'hilchsa kavasei de Rav, v'hilchsa kavasei de Rebbe." The bottom line, the halacha is like Rav, that a rumor is not enough; you need edim, and the halacha is also like Rebbe. That dover mechur is enough. So the Gemara says, "Kasha hilchasa hilchasa." Well, one second, then you have a contradiction between the two statements of halacha. So what is it? Is it that if a rumor is going around about this woman, then that's enough for Beis Din to force them to get divorced, or do you need act, which would be like what Rebbe is saying, or is it enough to or dover mechur, or is it like Rav that you need actual edim? So the answer, and by the way, you know, the edim, when we say there were actual edim, we don't necessarily, the edim don't have to see, the Gemara tells us in Makkos, they don't have to see kimitcho b'shveferes, they don't have to see the actual penetration, they wouldn't even be allowed to, you're not allowed to look at such a thing. It would mean, for example, if edim saw them going into seclusion together, or if edim actually, for Mrs. Bastin, for example, we say mishiyiro kiminafin, they see them in the position that people would be in when they're having relations, even if they don't see the actual penetration. But anyway, in the case that we were just talking about in the Braisa, they didn't. We saw the Roichel leaving, and then after he left, we see one of these compromising things. We see her putting on her underwear, or we see saliva there on the bed canopy, etc. So Kasha Hilchasa Hilchasa. So we have a contradiction between the two halachas. Do we need Edim or not? And the answer is like Kasha Hova Kol Deposik. It depends whether the rumor then stops. In other words, where a contradictory rumor starts going around saying that the original rumor was false versus not. So if there was a kol deposik, then we say, well, then the first rumor obviously was not strong enough. We see that there are other people are contradicting it. Therefore, we would need actual edim. Whereas if there was no contradictory rumor, then we would say that might be enough. To require them to get divorced. Although again, even then, according to Tosfos, we're not saying that the husband is required to divorce her. We're saying that the Roichel, if eventually she and the Roichel get married, if her husband chooses to divorce her, or if he dies and then she marries this Roichel, then we're saying the fact that there was a kol of leposik is reason enough for them to get divorced. So the Gemara says, so kol adolait posik v'leka edim kerebi. So if there's a rumor that's not stopping, however there are no edim, then we apply what Rebbe says, kol adolait posik edim kerab. However, if the coil stops because it's contradicted by another coil, however there are edim, then we go like Rav and say the fact is there are edim that she was tomei, that she was mezana, and therefore she's also to her husband. And therefore, she's also usher to marry this other guy. So the Gemara says, a kol adolait posik ad kama. Okay, so what is the definition of a kol adolait posik? How long does it have to be going on for before we say that it has a certain validity? So Omer Abaya, Omer li aim. So Abaya says that my mother told me, and when we say throughout Shas, Abaya's mother, what we really mean is his foster mother. The Gemara tells us in Kiddushin that Abaya's mother passed away in childbirth. His father passed away before he was even born. It's one of the reasons why there's a famous reason why he's called Abaya, because Abaya stands for Asher B'cho Yerucham Yosem, because he was a double Yosem when he was born. Anyway, so the Gemara says in Kiddushin that whenever it chas, Abaya says, Omer li aim, my mother told me, means his foster mother who raised him. Anyway, so she told me, Dume Demase Yoimo Pauga. when we have the dumi means, Rashi says, means two explanations. It means the suspect of the city, or dumi means the rumors of the city, that people say, it seems to me that such and such. Yoima upalga, if it lasts for a day and a half, then that's considered a rumor that has a certain validity in halacha. However, the Gemara says, v'lo yamar an ela v'lo pasek beini uveini. That applies only if it was going on constantly during that day and a half. It didn't stop in between. Ava pasek beini uveini. But if in between it stopped, if in between people right away during that day and a half were contradicting it, then, and so even though it continues after that, ha pasek, the fact is there was an interruption in the middle. Therefore, we don't pay it any attention in halacha. But however, that would only apply if it didn't stop because of fear. However, if it stopped because of fear, in other words, if we're talking about that this is a couple that's rich or prominent or whatever, and people are afraid of the consequences of spreading rumors about them, well, then that doesn't prove anything. Then the fact that it stopped is because of yira, is because of that fear of them, that doesn't necessarily show that's not a valid rumor. On the other hand, v'layamaran el deleka ovim, that last part though, the whole thing only applies if they don't have enemies. Aval ikka ovim, but if they have enemies in town, ovim hu da'apki le'lekola, then the likelihood is that the enemies are spreading the rumor, and therefore again we have less reason to consider it something meaningful in halacha. So in other words, in short, for it to be considered a meaningful rumor, it would have to be they don't have any particular enemies. On the other hand, there's nobody who's afraid of them because of their social position in town or whatever. And it goes on for a day and a half with no interruption. We learned in Moed Cotton a few months back, we learned about this piece as well. There the Gemara added another criterion, which is that if the rumor starts spreading again, hodor novat, it starts sprouting forth again. So the Orach HaNeir wonders why our Gemara leaves that out. Achronim answer, because over there, we're not talking about in terms of halacha, really. There we're talking about, the Gemara mentioned it in the context of a piece of agadta, that a person shechosh to noisib a dover, that if a person is suspect of something, so sometimes we say that, there might be a little bit of truth to it. Sometimes we say that chosh to noisib a dover ve'enbo, they suspect him completely groundlessly, like the Gemara says over there, that they suspected Moshe groundlessly. So therefore, in that connection, it's relevant whether the rumor resurfaces or not. Here in Al Gemara, we were talking about the halacha, whether we force her to get divorced, then that's not relevant. Okay. The Gemara says, Tnan Hossam. Here's another related discussion. Tnan Hossam, we learn in a Mishnah in Gittin, Hamotzias Ishte Mishum Shemra, if a person divorces his wife because of a bad name. So in other words, again, where there were bad rumors going around her. So before, up till now, we've been talking about whether he's forced to divorce her. Now we're talking about, suppose that he divorces her voluntarily for that reason. It could be the same thing. It could be whether he does voluntarily or whether Beistin is forcing him to. Either way, lo yachzer, he's not allowed to remarry her later. We mean even if she didn't get married in between. If she got married to somebody else in between, we've already learned earlier in the Masechta that she's also to remarry him daraisa. But if she didn't get married in between, nevertheless, d'rabbanan, he's not allowed to remarry her. And mishum neder lo yachzer. Similarly, if he divorced her because of a neder that she made, where therefore he was upset at her and divorced her because of that, then therefore he shouldn't remarry her. Now, why not? So Rashi brings from the Gemara in Gittin that the Gemara brings over there two reasons. Rashi brings over here only one of them. That the reason is, if you say he's going to be allowed to remarry, so what might happen? She might go, let's say, for example, as far as the neder, let's say, she might go and be matur neder. Then the husband is going to say, you know what, if I had known that it was possible to be matur that neder, then I never would have divorced her. Well, then it comes out that he's mevatel the get that he gave her retroactively. Well, therefore, it comes out that if she married somebody else in between, then it's going to be the get is going to be batel. The children are going to be mamzerim. So we don't want to have that problem. Therefore, to begin with, we tell him, you should know that if you're divorcing her because of this, because of a neder or because of a rumor, you're never going to be allowed to remarry her. And therefore, so we tell him, if you really like her, if you really don't want get divorced from her, well, then find a way to be matir neder, and then you won't have the problem in the first place. So we do that. So the Gemara calls it over there in Gittin Mishum Kilkul, because he might mess things up for her and her new husband by saying that I would have never given her the get if I had known that I could be matir this neder. The Gemara gives the other reason over there why he wouldn't be able to remarry her is Mishum Knas, because of the fact that she made such a neder. We don't want Jewish women to be careless with making the darim. Anyway, the point is, so we're saying that he shouldn't remarry her because of this Zera Drabon. So Sholach le Rav Bahuna le Rav Barav Nachman, Yilamdenu Rabbeinu, so teach us our Rebbe, Konas Mahushiyotzi. So what happens if the husband was over on that and remarried her? So again, we're not talking about where she remarried somebody else in between, because again, that would be a case that the Torah says is also to do. We're talking about she didn't remarry yet. Now, so we told them to begin with, when you're divorcing her, be aware that this is permanent. You're never going to be able to remarry her, even if you find out that the rumors were untrue, or even if she's able to be matir neder. So now, let's say he was over on that and remarried her. Would we force them to get divorced? So konas ma'u shiyotzi. Omale, so Rabbi Barav Nachman answers, Tanina. Well, we learned in our Mishnah, Hanitan al Eishes Ish. We had the case where there was a rumor going around that a person was, or we said, according to Rav, it meant that there was an actual, that there were actual Edim, that he was Mizana with an Eishes Ish, V'hotziya mitachas yadai, and the husband divorced her, Alpha Pisha Konas Yotzi. Then, even if the guy who the rumor was going about with married her, then we make him divorce her. So we see, therefore, That we see in our Mishnah, we're saying that once the husband divorced her because of Shemra, that means that he demonstrated that he believes that Koil and that she's also to him. So the same thing over here, when he divorces her because of a Shemra, same idea. It means that he accepted that the rumor is true, and therefore she's also to him. So the answer would be that the same way as in our Mishnah, we're saying we would force her to divorce the other guy, the same way in your case that you're asking about, we'd force her to divorce him if they patched it up and decided to remarry. Amalei, but Rav Barahuna says, me dummy. How do you compare the two cases? Hasam hoitzi uha, in the case of our Mishnah, based in forced them to get divorced. V'hocha hoitziya, here we're talking about where he voluntarily divorced her. So there could be a big difference. In other words, in our Mishnah, we said that there were Eidei Tumah, so therefore when I told her she's also to the other guy, here the whole issue for her to remarry her husband is Derabanan. So Rav Barav Nachman, so what would he answer to that? His version of our Mishnah had the word Hotziya. His version of the Mishnah had that it wasn't that Hotzi Uha, that they based in forced them to get divorced, but rather Hotziya, that her husband voluntarily divorced her. And nevertheless, the Mishnah is saying that she's also to the other guy. Well, by the same token, then he extends that to say that she'd also be also to her husband himself. So the Gemara says, Vakati midomi. Still, how do you compare the two cases? Hocha baal v'hosam boil. In our Mishnah, we're talking about the boil. That is marrying her. So even if we don't know for sure that he was boyal to her, we only had a rumor, and their husband wasn't required to divorce her, it's still dava maguna, it's still a repulsive thing that he should be marrying her when there's reason to suspect that they were mizana. Whereas in your case, that with the case where Rav Barav Huna is asking about, is it her own husband wants to be married? There's a big difference. So Rav Barav Nachman answers him, Shaper Dami Adadi. As a matter of fact, there is a certain similarity between there is a proper similarity between them, because Hocha Amar Rabbanon Lo Yichnes V'im Konas Yotzi, in the case of our Mishnah, we're saying that the boyal shouldn't marry her, or the suspected boyal shouldn't marry her, the imkonas yotzi, but if he did, then we force him to get divorced. Hochinami, the same way in your question also, Ami Rabbanon lo yachzer, the Chachamim say he shouldn't remarry her, the imkonas yotzi, but if he married her, then we require him to divorce. So there is a similarity between them. However, the Gemara says, Veloihi, but it's not so. Nevertheless, you can distinguish between the two cases. Hosam alumi alme lakola. Because the difference is, in the case of our Mishnah, when the boyol marries, the suspected boyol marries her, that strengthens the original rumor. Like this, there was a rumor going around that she was mezana with this guy, and now, when he ends up marrying her, then it makes it stronger. People say, you know what, it must be true. They had something going on. Why else would she marry dafka him? But over here, hocha, but in the case of Rabbi Bar Rav Huna's question, just the opposite. Aminan kumbe b'kola v'lese. We can say that the husband looked into it and found out that it was false, that the whole rumor was false, and therefore that when he's remarrying her, that doesn't strengthen the coil. On the contrary, it's reason to say that the original coil was not true. So nevertheless, we're still saying that when he divorces her, Beis Din will tell him that that you should know this is permanent. You're not allowed to remarry her. But nevertheless, that doesn't mean that if he remarries her, that necessarily we would force them to get divorced. Okay. So now the Mishnah, these couple of Mishnayos have digressed from the main topic of Yevamos, because we had a couple of Mishnayos ago cases where we said that Beis Din does or doesn't force people to get divorced after we had some cases where there was a suffix whether the Yivum had to be done or not, or cases where it's a suffix whether they're a chalutza or not. And we said that we don't, in some cases we do, and in some cases we don't force them to get divorced. So that's why we're in the middle of a series of Mishnayos now dealing with similar kinds of things where Beis Din will or won't force a couple to get divorced. So here's another example. The Mishnah says, Hamevi get mi medinas hayam. If a person brings a get from overseas, and we know that at the beginning of Gittin it talks about a takana de rabbanon, that he has to say b'fanei nichtav b'fanei nechtam. He has to say that it was written and signed in my presence. And the Gemara discusses in Gittin and then at the beginning of Gittin the reasons, because the people outside Eretz Yisrael are not so expert in the dinim of writing a get. Or because you don't have enough people traveling between Chutz La'aretz and Eretz Yisrael to be able to certify that these signatures are valid. So therefore, we have the guy saying b'fanei nichtav b'fanei nechtam, and then he, together with the edim on the get, in effect constitutes sort of a Beis Din. The Gemara discusses it at length at the beginning of Gittin. Anyway, so v'omer b'fanei nichtav b'fanei nechtam. So he brings this get and makes this declaration b'fanei nichtav b'fanei nechtam. So now the point is, the validity of that get depends on him. If he were to not be able to say b'fanei nichtav b'fanei nechtam, we would say this get is no good. So even though the get has signatures of edim on it, that's not ultimately what's making it a valid get. What's making it a fully valid get is him saying b'fanei nichtav b'fanei nechtam. Therefore, lo yisaris ishtoy. Therefore, we don't allow him to marry the guy's wife. Since we're depending on him, then if nothing else, it looks bad that we're going to say that it makes it look as though he gave this testimony because he wanted to marry this woman. So therefore, we don't want to allow that to happen. On the other hand, which the implication is that if he's bringing it in Eretz Yisrael, then as the Gemara is going to say, then there's no problem because we're not relying on him, because the get would be valid. The get would be valid without him. If one aide comes to Beis Din and says that the husband died, which also is matir his wife to remarry, or haragtiv, or he says, I killed him, or haragnuhu, we killed him. So again, the fact that now we're going to be matir her is dependent on his aides. This is one of the cases in halacha where you don't need two aidim. One aid is enough. But nevertheless, we learned the other day the concept. We learned yesterday, actually, the concept of Uluzus Fasayim Harchik Mimcha, keep away from yourself wagging tongues, meaning that's going to what you're going to have over here. People are going to say, you know what, why did he come and say that her husband is dead? Because he wanted to marry her. So therefore we testified falsely. So she'd be able to marry anybody else, but not him because of that concern. Rabbi Yehuda says it depends. If the aide says I killed him, then we don't allow her to remarry at all, not even to marry somebody else, because by saying I killed him, he's saying he's a Rasha. Well, as a Rasha, he's not allowed to give aides. Now the Chachamim disagree for reasons that we're going to say in the Gemara. However, if Rabbi Yehuda says, if he says we kill them, then tinasa ishtoi, then she's allowed to get remarried because then his eidos is not possible for reasons that we're going to see in the Gemara. So the Gemara starts off. Tosfos, by the way, mentions in the Reisha when the Tanakhama says haragtiv haragnuhu, the Tanakhama doesn't really make a distinction between them, so we don't really need the Tanakhama would say either way she's allowed to remarry anybody else. The only reason we're distinguishing between those two phrases is because Rabbi Yehuda distinguishes between them. So therefore, in the Tanakhama's words, we also mention that distinction. Okay, so the Gemara says taima de medina sayam. So why are we saying that the aide should not marry her? When he brings the get, is only because he's coming from Medina Sayyam, he's coming from a place outside Eretz Yisrael, and therefore we need him to say, b'fanen nichtam, b'fanen nechtam, for the get to be kosher. Da'alei kosam chinon, we're relying on him, without him making that declaration, that the get is not kosher. Avo me'Eretz Yisrael, the implication is if he brings a get from one place to another within Eretz Yisrael, where, as the Gemara discusses in Gittin over there, in Eretz Yisrael, the people are knowledgeable in the dinim of Gittin, because there are many Tamar Chachamim all over Eretz Yisrael, and also there's commonly enough people traveling from point A to point B that the guy would be afraid to bring a get with forged signatures, because it's not that hard to find out the truth. So then, Avama Eretz Yisrael, the lava like Kosam Chinon. So when he brings it in Eretz Yisrael, we're not relying on him because the get will be kosher, even if he doesn't say anything. Yisra Sishtoi. The implication seems to be that he would actually be able to marry her, he himself, the Shliach who's bringing it, because, because the validity of the get doesn't depend on him. The problem with that is, what about the case of where the next case in the Mishnah, where he says that the guy died, where after all we're not fully relying on him because we also depend on the fact that Omar Mao Isha Daika Umintzava. Later on in the Masechta, we're going to talk about it at length. We're going to have cases later on in our Masechta where Adim come and tell and say that a woman's husband is dead. So we say that she is very careful before she remarries. She's going to check it out thoroughly and make sure that it really is true, because we're going to learn later on that there are all kinds of consequences and penalties that she faces if her husband shows up alive. And she doesn't want to do that. Therefore, she's careful before she remarries to make sure that that everything is on the up and up. So therefore, we're not exclusively relying on this aid in that case. And still our Mishnah is saying that he shouldn't marry this woman. So what's the difference? Why is it with a get, when he's bringing the get in Eretz Yisrael, we're not relying on him, we're relying on the edim that are signed in the get, and in the case where he comes and says that her husband is dead, we're relying not only on his edus, we're relying on her checking out the situation, and still we say, in one case it seems he's allowed to marry her, and in the other case, not. The answer is hosam lekach sava. The difference is that when he's testifying that her husband is dead, there's no document to go along with it. So it's true, we're not relying exclusively on him, but because there's no document, it's possible that he might be trying to testify falsely because he wants to marry her. Pacha ikaksava, whereas over here, there is an actual written get, and it has Adim signed on it, and therefore he might be afraid to tell false Adus, because we have the document in front of us. It'll be deposited in Beis Din, and then they can check out the signatures. Ditznan, as in fact we learn precisely that distinction later on in our Masechta. Ma ben get lemisa, we say that at the end of the Masechta, in the last Perek, we're going to talk about that there are certain women in general, when a person comes and says that Pliny has died, we usually accept that and we allow his wife to remarry, even if that Pliny was a woman, even though Eidus by women is usually possible, here the Chachamim allowed it. On the other hand, the Mishnayos describe over there that there are certain women who we say, or we assume that they're rivals of hers, that they don't like her, and they might be deliberately saying false Eidus in order to convince her to remarry, and then her husband's going to show up and she's going to be in a really bad situation, among them, for example, her mother-in-law, her sister-in-law, her tzara, etc. So if they come and say that her husband is dead, we don't believe them. However, the Mishnah says that If on the other hand, one of these women comes with a get for her, then we do accept that get, even though they have to say b'fana nechta, b'fana nechta. So what's the difference? So we said in the Mishnah, ma ben get l'misa, shak sav mechiyach. The difference is because when there's a get, there's an actual written get, and therefore we're not relying exclusively on her. Whereas when she says that your husband died, then we're relying exclusively on her, and because this is a woman who doesn't like, who has a chazaka of not liking her, then therefore we can't accept that edus. So we see that there's that distinction, so we can draw that same distinction in our Mishnah between whether there's an actual written get, and we're not relying exclusively on this guy because we're talking about it's in Eretz Yisrael, he doesn't even have to say b'fanenechtam, versus when he's saying that her husband died, we're there, we are, it's true, we're not exclusively relying on him, we're relying also on the fact that Isha Daiko Minseva, but nevertheless, since there's no written document, it's more likely that he might be lying. There's more, not more likely, but there's more of a concern that he might be lying. Okay, the Mishnah had said mes haragtiv haragnuhu lo yiseres ishtoi, that if the aide comes and says that he died, or he says I killed him, or we killed him, then we said we also don't allow him to marry the wife. So implying hu nihu de lo yiseres ishtoi. So the implication is he's not allowed to marry her because we're concerned that he's testifying falsely because he wants to marry her. Hola achar tinase. The implication is she'd be allowed to marry somebody else. In other words, we do accept that aegis. We do accept that her husband is dead on the basis of that aegis. The problem with that is, well, Amar Rabbi Yosef, didn't Rabbi Yosef say that if a person comes to Beis Din and says, Ploini Rava Ani La'Oinsi, that if a person comes to Beis Din and says that Ploini sodomized me against my will, which would make him Chayev Nisa because Mishkav Zohar, so then, so then we say that the person himself who came to Beis Din, if he has another aid along with him, they can combine to be valid aiders to have the guy executed. In other words, the guy who's saying that he was the victim, he's not a rosha for that because it was la'onsei. And we don't say he's negeya bedover because negeya bedover would only be, for example, when he has some financial stake in it or something like that. Just out of revenge, we're not going to suspect that he's testifying falsely. So therefore, he's one aide. And if we have another aide who saw what happened, then you have enough to be able to execute the guy. On the other hand, if the same guy comes to Beis Din and says that Pliny sodomized me with my will, with my consent, then we don't accept his aedus at all because Rosha, because then he's a Rosha, because both the Reveya and the Nirba are equally over on the issue in the Torah, Ves Zachav Lo Sishkav Mishkve Isha. So therefore, if he says that it was with my consent, then he's a Rosha. The Torah says you're not allowed to join together with a Rosha to be an aid of to be a false aid. So in other words, in this case, we say that he himself is a Rasha, he's Posel Eidus. So by the same token, when this guy comes to Beis Din and says, I killed Pliny, in doing that, he's saying that he is a Rasha. So how do we accept his Eidus at all? Never mind the question of whether he can marry her. How can she marry anybody on the basis of such Eidus? So you're going to answer maybe Eidos regarding allowing a woman to remarry is different because the Chachamim were makel in it. After all, for example, we accept one aid and we accept women and so forth, even though usually they would be posel Eidos. But it can't be because V'ha'omer Rav Menashe, Gazlan de Divreim Kosher La'Eidos Isha, Rav Menashe says that if somebody is a Gazlan only midrabbanon, then he's still kosher to testify that a woman's husband died. A Gazlan midrabbanon would be, for example, Rashi says, let's say, for example, gamblers and people who mafriche yonim, which the Gemara in Sanhedrin has two possibilities. What it means? It means people who gamble on pigeon races, or it means people who use their pigeons to lure away other people's pigeons. Whatever it is, those kinds of things are considered gezel midrabbanon. And we say that they're possible for regular aedus. However, they are kosher for aedus isha. But Rav Menashe continues, gazlan de divrei Torah possible aedus isha. But a gazlan, somebody who's a gazlan on a daraisa level, somebody who actually stole from somebody else, or a gazlan really means that he robbed it, that he grabbed something out of the other guy's hands, then he's possible aedus isha. So the same thing would apply to anybody who was over publicly on any issu daraisa, which includes lois sirtzach. So how can the Mishnah be saying that? How can the Mishnah be saying that if the guy says I killed him, then we should accept him as an aid, and we say only that he shouldn't marry her if he's a Rasha? How can he be giving aidus in the first place? Namer of Menashe de Amak Rabbi Yehuda. Would that mean that we would have to say that a Menashe holds like Rabbi Yehuda of our Mishnah, who distinguishes between whether he says Haragtiv or Haragnuhu, whether he says I killed him or whether he said we killed him? The problem with that is the halacha is not like Rabbi Yehuda. We would rather make Rabbi Menashe's statement go work according to the Chachamim as well. Is Amalach Rabbi Menashe and no Damri Apilu LeRabbanan. Rabbi Menashe can answer, as a matter of fact, my statement is in fact even according to the Rabbanan. The time of the Rabbanan Hamba. So why are the Chachamim accepting the testimony in the case of our Mishnah when he says I killed him? Why are we allowing such testimony if he's making himself a Rasha? Is based on what Rabbi said. The Amar Rava, Adam Karev Eitzel Atzmai, Rava says a person is considered his own closest relative, and we know that close relatives are possible Eidus. The Einot Amesim Atzmai Rasha, a person's Eidus cannot make himself a Rasha. So Rashi explains, we say, Hoydas Baldin Kamea Eidim Dami. That would be, for example, a person comes to Beis Din and says, I owe Pliny $100, then he owes it to him based on his own statement. But to make himself a Rasha and make himself that he'd be Chayv Knas or Malkus or to be Possel Eidos, we can't accept on the basis of his own words. So we say over here a concept called in Halacha Palginan Dibura. We split up what he said. In other words, in effect, what we say is we accept the part that he's saying that the guy is dead. We ignore the part that he's saying that he killed him. There is a considerable amount of discussion among Rishonim and Achronim about the ins and outs of this Palgin and Dibura when we apply this concept and when we don't. For example, one of the many examples is the Mordechai says that Palgin and Dibura allows us to ignore part of his Eidos. It doesn't allow us, for example, if the only way to say that he's kosher the Eidos is by inventing something that he didn't say, then we're not going to do that. So over here, in other words, in effect, what we're doing is we're saying that we're saying that he's saying the guy is dead. That we accept. But the detail that he says, I killed him, that we don't accept. So therefore we do consider that his Eidos is kosher. We ignore the part that he's saying that I killed him. Rabbi Menashe can answer that. So now the question is, Leimer of Yosef to Amak Rabbi Yehuda. Well then, do we have to say that Rabbi Yosef, who disagrees with that concept, holds like Rabbi Yehuda specifically? Who would there who Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah distinguishes between whether he says Haragdiv, I killed him, or Haragnu, who, meaning we killed him, where therefore he's not necessarily the one who actually killed him. You could have, in other words, Haragnu, who, on the face of it, could mean that a bunch of people, let's say, hit him, and we don't know which one is the one who actually gave him the blow, the final blow that killed him. So do we have to say that Rabbi Yosef holds like Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Yosef would say that therefore, if he says that I killed him, then there's no wiggle room in that. Obviously, he killed him, and therefore he'd be postulators. So Amalach Rabbi Yosef, I'm not the Amri, I feel a little bottom. Rabbi Yosef can also answer that I'm going according to the Chachamim as well. The shiny Eidos Isha, the Akiva Barabanan. It's different when it comes to the case of Eidos Isha. There, the Chachamim were makel and said that we believe even a Rosha. Rabbi Menashe, the Amak Rabbi Yehuda. Now Rabbi Menashe holds like Rabbi Yehuda. I don't have to agree with Rabbi Menashe. Rabbi Yosef and Rabbi Menashe are both Amuroyim. So Rabbi Yosef is allowed to disagree with Rabbi Menashe. So Rabbi Yosef would say Rabbi Menashe's statement about the case where the guy says Pliny Rabbani Leritzoni, where he says that Pliny sodomized me with my consent. And we're saying that he's possible Laedros, and therefore we can't have him as one of the two Aedim for that. That was Rabbi Menashe's statement. Rabbi Yosef says that would be specifically only according to Rabbi Yehuda. The Chachamim might disagree with that. Meanwhile, when we're talking about Eidus Isha, which is the case of our Mishnah, then we would say that even if the guy says Haragdiv, the Chacham was saying, that's still fine. We can still allow her to remarry on that basis, because even if by saying Haragdiv, he's making himself a Rosha, nevertheless, it doesn't matter. Even a Rosha, Rabbi Yosef is saying, would be kosher for this kind of Eidus to testify that her husband is dead. So it comes out, in other words, that Rabbi Yosef does not necessarily hold of the concept of Palgin and Dibura. But we would say different Achronim talk about different possibilities. Among them, for example, that maybe Rabbi Yosef would say, once we believe him on part of it, then we believe him on the rest of it. So fine, we believe him to say to make himself a Rasha, but we're, along with that, we're also believing him to say that after all, her husband is dead, and therefore that she should be able to remarry. So then we said in the Mishnah, Haragdiv Chulo Haragnuhu Tinase Chulo. The Tanakhama had said there's no difference whether the aide says, I killed him or we killed him. Either way, she is allowed to remarry other people, but she's not allowed to marry him because we're concerned that he came and testified falsely because he wants to marry her. But then we had Rabbi Yehuda distinguished and said there's a difference whether he says, I killed him or whether he says, we killed him. What is the actual difference? Amar of Yehuda, so Rab Yehuda, which is the Amorah of Yehuda, he's explaining the Tana, Rabbi Yehuda. So Rab Yehuda says, but Omer ani hoyisi im hogo. The case is, we're talking about that he's saying, I was with the killers. So in other words, he's saying that there was a whole gang of us. Some members of the gang went and killed him. I wasn't actually involved, but I was there as part of that gang. Which in fact Tosfos says that even if he actually says Haragnuhu, we still reinterpret that to say that it means that not that I was one of the ones who hit him, but rather I was among the group that hit him, which doesn't require us to say that he was actually one of the ones who did it at all. Which therefore, again, he's not making himself a Rosha by that. So the Gemara asks Bahotanya, what do you mean though? We learn in a Braisa. Omru loylo Rabbi Yehuda, the Chachamim said to Rabbi Yehuda, how could you say that there's a difference between Haragdiv and Haragnu? Maisa belistim echad, it happened once with a certain robber. The pashtos a yid. It has to be because he was saying, because we're going to say he said Aegis. He was going out and was about to be executed in Megizas Kaputkia, which is the name of a place. Megizas can also mean, Kaputkia is the name of a country. Nowadays, part of Turkey, Megizas can mean the name of the city. Megizas sometimes also means a ford or a shallow area in the river where you can cross. So it can mean that it was around there. Whatever the case, he was about to be executed. But Amalahem, he tells people who were there, L'chu Imrul al-Eshes Shimon ben Koyen, go tell the wife of Shimon ben Koyen, Ani haragdi es baila b'knisasi l'lud. I killed her husband when I was coming into Lud. V'amila b'knisasoy l'lud. Or another version, as he said, when he was coming into Lud. Whatever, the guy is saying that I killed him. V'si was ishto. And Beis Din accepted that testimony, and they allowed his wife to be married. So he says, Ani haragdi. So I killed, and the Chachamim say, still you see, and you see that the Chachamim of that time allowed his wife to be married. So therefore, obviously that shows that even if he says, I killed him, nevertheless, we still say, for reasons that we said before, either because Palgin and Dibura, either because we say we divide up his testimony, and we say that it means that we accept the fact that the guy is dead, but not the fact that he killed him, or we say, because by Aegis Isha, we allow even testimony from a Rasha. But whatever the case, they say to Rabbi Yehuda, you're saying that if he says Haragdi, we don't accept the Eidus at all. Well, why not? Based on this story, we should. Amar lahem, so Rabbi Yehuda answers them, Sham Raya, you're bringing a proof from there. But Omer, Aniho, Yisim Hergab, he didn't actually say, I killed him. He said, I was together with the killers. I was part of the gang, but not that I touched him. So the Gemara says, V'holistim Katani, what do you mean? It says that he was a robber. And a robber usually is somebody who does that, who kills. Okay, the Gemara answers, Shenit Masayide Listi. This doesn't mean necessarily that he personally was a robber. He was caught together with a gang of robbers. The Gemara says, Well, Yotzele Horeg Katoni, what do you mean? That they're taking him out to execute him. The Pashtos, that means that he was actually a criminal. The Gemara says, that's not a proof. But if you heard it, could say, Be'edina, do'evi kechavim, do'le daiki b'katni. We're talking about it wasn't a Jewish based in, that sentenced him. It was a Goyisha based in. They're not always careful about the rules of evidence. So therefore, so they might end up, they might actually end up executing an innocent person. So just because he's being taken out to be killed doesn't necessarily mean that he himself was one of the robbers, let alone the one who actually killed her husband. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says, I still stand by what I say, that if the guy actually says haragdi, then there's no wiggle room to say that he didn't. And therefore, we say that the woman's not allowed to marry at all. However, the halacha is like a chachamim, that it doesn't matter because palgin and dibura. We do split up his testimony, and we say the part that incriminates himself we ignore, and the other part we accept. Okay, the Mishnah continues. Another case of a questionable marriage. Hachacham she'oser es ha'isha b'neder al baila. Suppose that a woman made a neder to not have hanah from her husband. Now, the husband, as we know, can be made for her nedarim, but he only has that day to do it. So he wasn't made for it. So now the neder is in effect. Now she came to a chacham to be matur neder. Suppose the chacham was not able to find a pesach. So he says, you know what? I'm sorry. You're gonna have to divorce your husband, because after all, you made a neder not to have hanah from him. And as long as you stay married to him, you're being over on that. So if that chacham did that, hareza lo yisa'ena, later on, he's not allowed to marry her for the same reason, because of chashad, because people are going to think, you know what, he probably could have, if he hadn't been biased over here, he would have been able to find some way to be married to her. But he was biased because he himself wanted to marry her. And therefore he didn't bother looking for a pesach to be matter her to her husband. So hareza lo yisa'ena, so we don't allow him to marry. Miyano isha chotze b'fonav. On the other hand, what if the woman did miyun in his presence, or she did chalitza in his presence? So then it wasn't the chacham by himself, it was a group, because those things have to be done in front of beis din. Yisa'ena, so then he is allowed to marry her in pnei shul beis din, because that's a beis din. It wasn't just this chacham by himself. We're not going to say that a whole beis din of three, we're not going to suspect them that they're doing it for improper reasons. So the Gemara says, ha hitira yisa'ena. Okay, so the implication is that the Mishnah is saying that if he wasn't matter her to her husband, and therefore her husband divorced her, then the chacham is not allowed to marry her. The implication seems to be, though, that if the chacham was matter her, and then she stayed together with her husband, and later on, at some later point, her husband died or divorced her, then the chacham is allowed to marry her. Well, the question is, b'may askinan? Well, what's the scenario? Ilema b'chad, are we talking about to begin with that there was one chacham was or wasn't matir hu neder? Well, chad mi mati matir. Since when can one be matir neder anyway? Well, Amram. Tana, we learn in a braisa, hataras nedarim b'shloisha. That hataras nedarim has to be done by three. And if it's three, then there shouldn't be a problem for the same reason it was said in the Mishnah, that miun and chalitza isn't a problem. The elabit tlosa, so if you're talking about three, mi chashidi, would we suspect that they're doing it, that they're failing to be matur neder, or that they are being matur neder for the sake of their chaver? No, well, tanan mi anar shachotza b'fanav yisanim, if neshu beistin. We said that once it's a beistin, there's no problem. The answer is, well, olam b'chad. We are, after all, talking about one chacham that she went to be matur neder. As we have an example where Rav Chista, as says in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, in a different context, that we're talking about where you have one, we have one chacham, a yochid mumcha, one chacham who has smicha, and we mean the original smicha ish mipiish, is able to be matur neder, hochanami be yochid mumcha, the same thing, that's the scenario we're talking about in the Mishnah. So if she had gone to a beis din of three, then there would be no problem. Whether they were able to be matur her and she remained married to her husband and later on he died or divorced her, or whether they were not able to be matur her and she and her husband ended up divorcing. Either way, any of them would be allowed to marry her because then there's no chashad. A beis din were not choshed. But if she had gone to a yochid mumcha, then it depends. If that yochid mumcha was able to be matur neder and she and her husband remained married and later on he died or divorced her, then sure, she can marry this chacham, there's no chashad. But if he wasn't matur her and she and her husband had to get divorced, then we're saying in our Mishnah that he shouldn't marry her, because that's where you have the chashad that people are going to say, you know what, he could have been matur her, he just didn't bother looking for a reason because he himself wanted to marry her. Okay. So the Gemara says, the next part of the Mishnah said, Mianoi Shecholtza Fula. We said that if she did Miyun Uchalitza in front of a Beis Din, then that's fine. Any one of them could marry her afterwards. So the Gemara says, time of the Beis Din. So the Mishnah is saying the reason why it's okay is because there was a Beis Din, implying that there were three. Ha-betre-loi. The implication would seem to be that had these things been done in front of two, then it would be no good. Well, Maishna Mahodatnan, then why is it different than this that we learn in a Mishnah or the Tanya, really? It's Braisa. Edim Achasimas de Mekach Valgetisha. When you have Edim that sign a document about a field being sold or on a get, Loi Choshul Chacham Lodavazeh, then the Chachamim were not concerned about that. We don't say that neither of those Edim should buy that field or neither of those Edim should marry this woman. So even though it's only two, it's quite enough. So why in our Mishnah are we saying Mipnei Shehem Beistin, Mipnei Shehu Beistin, implying only because it's a Beistin, which is three, is there no problem? The answer is, the Gemara says, He Gufa Kamash Malon. That's exactly what the Mishnah wants to inform us. La'apuki mimanda oma miyun b'pnei shnayim. The Mishnah wants to tell us, not like the opinion, which we're going to learn, we're going to have a perek, a whole perek later on in our Masechta that talks about the dinim of miyun, and we're going to have an opinion over there that says that it's enough that the miyun can be done in front of two people. You don't need a beis din. Our Mishnah wants to tell us kamash one miyun begimel. So the Mishnah wants to tell us that you need three. So the implication is not that if it had happened in front of the implication is not that something that happens in the presence of two, for example, a get that requires two edim, that neither of them can marry her. The Mishnah just wants you to know, you should be aware that miyun has to take place, that miyun and chalitza have to both take place in front of a beis din. Chalitza also, for that matter, we're going to have opinions later on when we get to the perek mitzvah chalitza, also towards the end of our masechta. We're going to have opinions there also that you don't require it to be done in front of a beis din. So therefore, our Mishnah wants to stress that both of them, miyun and chalitza, have to be done in front of a beis din of three. So the Gemara says Iboilahu. So now the question becomes: in the various cases of the last couple of Mishnayos, for example. So Rashi says actually we're talking about the last couple of Mishnayos. So we're talking about the case of our Mishnah about the Chacham. We're also talking about the previous Mishnah of Hamevi Get. In both cases, we said that he's not allowed to marry her. So what happens? Konas Maushi Yotzi, if he did marry her, do we force them to get divorced? So Rashi says the question is on this Mishnah and on the previous Mishnah. Hagoyis HaGra brings actually from the Rambam agrees with that as well. However, the Rashba says that no, the question is only regarding the Chacham, the implication being, in other words, that when it comes to the aid who's bringing the get, then there's no question. Then we would say we require them to get divorced. But in our Mishnah, at least, in the case of the Chacham, and again, according to Rashi and the Rambam, also the case of the maybe get Mimdinas Yam, Konas Ma'u Shiyotzi. So if he married her, do we force them to get divorced? Rav Kahana Omar Konas Motzi. So Rav Kahana says that Rav Kahana says even if he married her, we do force them to get divorced. Rav Ashi Omar Konas Eine Motzi. And Rav Ashi says that no. Tony Lahu Rav Zuti Dveira Papi, Rav Zuti from the yeshiva of Rav Papa taught them, Kedivra Omer, taught them a braisa, Kedivra Omer, Konas Enimotzi. A braisa, like that says, like Rav Ashi, that we don't require him to get divorced. So now, Omer Le Rabbanon Le Rav Ashi, Gemara Oisvara, so the Chachamim asked Rav Ashi, when you're saying that they don't have to get divorced, is that something that you learned from your Rebbeim? And we just said that there was a braisa to that effect. So did you actually learn that from your Rebbeim, or Svara? Or did you come up with this based on your own Svara? Which, if it's Gemara, then it's going to be much harder to slug it up. If it's only Svara, then we might find a reason to slug it up. So he says, we can derive it from a couple of Mishnayos ago. We said, Hanitan Mishivcha v'nishtachra. We said that if there were rumors that a man was Mezana with a Shivcha, and later on she was freed, so now she's a Jewish woman and she's allowed to marry a Yid, or Me'evedes Kachav Meneskaira, he was suspected of being Mezana with a Goita, and later on she converted. Hareza lo Yichnas. So the Mishnah said he's not allowed to marry her. Beim Konas Ein Motzi. And if he married her, though, we don't force them to get divorced. So Alma Bitter Nono Lima Pinan. So we see just because of rumors is not just because of lies is not reason enough to tell them to get divorced. So when it comes Nitan al Ishis Ish, then we said then we said it's a and look, her husband divorced her because she was because of suspicion that she was mizana with this guy. Now this guy went and married her. That is really mechur adavar. That really looks like an ugly thing. It looks like there was something going on all the time. But other than that, we say that rumors are not enough to ask them. The same way over here, just because of rumors, just because people are going to say that this chacham was matir, was not matir her neder, in order to force her to get divorced, that we're not going to go. We're going to say that he shouldn't marry her, but we're not going to say that b'dievet, if he did marry her, that we should say that we should go so far as forcing them to get divorced. So nevertheless, he shouldn't. And Tosfos actually points out, even when the Gemara said before that when you have Edim, for example, who signed on a get isha, loy choshu chacham ladaver, then the chacham loy choshu chacham ladaver zeh, the chacham are not concerned because you have true Edim. Tosfos says, even then though, it's still a baal nefesh would stay away from that. So in other words, neither of the Edim on a get should, if either of the Edim on a woman's get is a baal nefesh, then he won't be marrying her afterwards. It would actually be mutter. We said loy choshu chachamim, but nevertheless, a baal nefesh would be careful about that. And then so that's a case where he is allowed, but a baal nefesh would stay away. But here we're talking about in the case of our Mishnah and the previous Mishnayos, we were saying that he shouldn't, but b'dievet, if they got married, then we don't force them to get divorced because it would only be a matter of laws, and laws is not reason enough for them to get divorced. Okay.